The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and to our online service, Daylight Savings Time, this morning. I'm Gina Mastrangeli, a member of this fellowship. Our minister is the Reverend Larry Pierce. Typically, we meet at our building on Ridge Pike in Lower Providence Township, but these are not typical times, so here we are. But whether we meet in person at our building or virtually online together, we welcome you. We welcome you to whoever you are, whatever your background, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whatever your gender, identity expression, or whom you love. We welcome all of you into our circle of love and compassion. Coincidentally, this month's UU Soul Matters theme is thresholds. When this theme had been decided, the coronavirus had not yet made its debut. But this May, we are indeed passing through a threshold. Our world, as we know it, is no longer. We are living a time of transition from a life before COVID-19 to today, where we are caught in the middle of a world pandemic. And after, who knows? I've heard many of you at Thomas Paine express concern and question, what will we reap from the situation? What might we take after we pass through these times? Each of us has been forced to deal with the COVID virus in ways that are unique to our own life situation, with our own life perspectives and coping methods. We're all grappling with COVID-19. And if anyone has ever doubted the interdependent web of life, this disease has demonstrated otherwise. Each of us, we're connected to other individuals in our community, our country, the world. I'm not too sure we really want to be connected to each other in this way. So, in order to insert a ray of hope into this morning's service, I've tapped into another medium that joins each of us to one another. And you can might guess what that might be? Music. I've selected three musical pieces from the movement Playing for Change. This movement brings together musicians across the world. Many are street musicians. Their hopeful aspiration is that music will unite people across all borders and promote change. The idea is positive change, though. This morning, we will explore these themes of crossing thresholds, fellowship, and our connection to humankind in the times of the COVID virus. We will do so through music, reflection, story, and sharing. Our invited speaker this morning is Father Donald Riley from the Order of St. Augustine, and he will speak to us on having had the experience, what's the lesson? Now, let us begin our morning's worship with our chalice lighting led by Susan and Larry Hare.
The chalice, lit with flame, symbolizes our UU liberal religious faith. The light illuminates wisdom across diverse traditions and people. It is the warmth of community and compassion and the flame of truth, justice, and hope. We will light our chalice this morning with words from Reverend L.A. McCray, who is the worship director coordinator on the Soul Matters team. We light this chalice on the shorelines of life, gathered as one at thresholds unknown, surrendering to the mystery and blessing that surely awaits as we dispel fear and call forth love, light, and peace, crossing over the threshold together as one. That's good. Preston Littweiler will now light our peace lamp, and after which Jerry Lazaro will lead us in our opening song.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with you, and with all the people of the world.
Good morning, everyone. Our gathering song this morning is Building Bridges. It's very brief. There's one verse. I'll sing it through once to remind you of the melody. You'll probably remember it as soon as you hear it. And then we'll sing it through twice more. And I know that you are all muted, so sing out to your heart's delight, right? If you sing off key, no one will know. If you change keys in the middle of the note, no one will notice. And please, if you feel like you just want to dance or whatever, or meditate, or just recite the words as we do it, please do so. The words should be on the screen.
Building bridges between our divisions, I reach out to you. Will you reach out to me with all of our voices and all of our visions? Friends, we could make such sweet harmony. Building bridges between our divisions, I reach out to you. Will you reach out to me with all of our voices and all of our visions? Friends, we could make such sweet harmony.
One more time.
Building bridges between our divisions, I reach out to you. Will you reach out to me with all of our voices and all of our visions? Friends, we could make such sweet harmony.
And now, Deb Morato will provide our moment for all ages, entering your sacred space.
May you live in interesting times. That wish sounds more like a curse today, doesn't it? Then again, it's something to strive for. Right now, you probably feel detached from people and drained. What we need is a sacred space, a place where we feel at our most relaxed, a place where we can think, a place where we can have a special ritual, something meaningful just for us, where we can stop, close our eyes, and breathe. This is my mezuzah. Make sure I have it right. This is, you place it on a door frame next to your door. It has to go on the right. It contains a scroll. Here's my scroll. And the scroll has a special prayer that's from the Torah. Before you enter your home, you're supposed to reach up, put your fingers on the mezuzah, bring them to your lips, and kiss. And now the prayer that's in the mezuzah is in you. And it is very special. It means that God and the Torah are entering the room. You are now ready to cross the threshold and enter your sacred space. It might be fun and meaningful to create your own words to put on paper and attach the paper to your doorway, a doorway to someplace special to you, where you can be alone for a while and meditate, light some incense, create art, write, whatever you're into, whatever you hold sacred, a place where you can feel alone but not lonely. Let me show you this. I have here on my doorway, right next to my sacred space. Ooh, I don't know if you can see it. Anyway, it looks like a scroll, and it's in the right place. It's wrapped up, and it's on the right-hand side of the door. Let's see what it says. It says, theater games. Theater is something very sacred to me. It's my passion. And I want to share my passion with you. So let's enter the threshold into my sacred theater space. This is a great game to play if you need to move around. So line up, everybody line up on one side of your sacred space, whatever space where you feel comfortable, and we're just going to cross to the other side. Simple as that. But what we're going to do is pretend that the floor is covered in different substances. So get into a line. We're going to move across the threshold as if the floor is covered in ice. You ready? Okay. What would it feel like? Think about what it would feel like. What kinds of shoes are you wearing? Are you wearing shoes? Are you taking your time trying not to slip? Are you moving quickly? Are you ice skating? Think about what the ice looks like and feels like. Think about the weather. Think about everything using all of your senses. Oh, I forgot to put on my shoes and my feet are freezing. We made it to the other side. The floor is now covered in mud. Think about how that would feel. Is the mud thick? Is it sticky? Is it messy? Is it difficult to pick up your feet and legs and take the next step? Just take your time moving across the floor using all of your senses to make it more realistic to you. Blech. Ugh. What does it feel like to move through mud? What does it feel like? We got to the other side. And when you're alone, you can do this, you know, whichever way you want. I'm just giving a brief description because of time constraints. But this is going to be a fun one. The floor is now covered with a den of sleeping tigers. How would you move across a room? How would you move? Show me. If there is a den of sleeping tigers, don't wake them up. Don't wake them up. No. Oh my goodness. Ah, I'm crossing my threshold and I'm moving. We got to the other side. We made it. The floor is now a red carpet. Move as if you are a movie star. How would a movie star move across a red carpet? The paparazzi are here. Yes. Oh, oh, yes. How would you move if you were a movie star? Now let's get silly, as if we weren't silly before. Let's get silly and walk across the floor as if it's covered in peanut butter. What does that look like? What would that feel like? What would it taste like? Have fun. There are no wrong answers in theater, and there is no wrong answer in your sacred space. This is the last one, gang. Let's walk through as if we're walking through peanut butter. Can you walk fast through peanut butter? Maybe you can see. Oh, we made it. Thank you. May you find a sacred space and live in interesting times. And now Phil Manos will lead us in a meditative reflection.
Good morning. It's impossible to believe that when we started to support the Daily Bread Community Food Pantry years ago, the coronavirus situation we face today would be a reality. It's incredible that something that was purported to last a couple of weeks has turned into 10 weeks and it continues. I wasn't sure when I made the commitment to continue our weekly food pantry contributions during this crisis that it would be so long, or that the members and friends of our congregation would step up to support the effort. In fact, we not only kept up our average weekly donations, but we sometimes exceeded it. I receive checks and cash in the mail weekly by folks who are committed to making this work. In addition, I find money in our food pantry can at the fellowship each week. And on top of it, there is sometimes a bag of food waiting at the door when I get there. Once there was a bag of food and a very generous check to give the people at the food pantry. To watch TV and see what goes on at food banks in the US is heartbreaking. To know that I can do my small part with the help of folks who see the need and are able and willing to help has been a spark of hope for me each week in social isolation. Just for me to see some of you who stop by TP on a Monday morning is uplifting. I think in some ways I am a different person, more acknowledging of what people are willing to do for others and aware of what I can contribute doesn't matter. Thank you for being who you are and helping me be more of who I am. This is Unitarian Universalism in spirit and in practice. Now, Gina.
Thank you, Phil. Your dedication, perseverance to the food pantry has certainly been an inspiration. Today's speaker, Father Donald Riley, has visited and spoken to our fellowship on several previous occasions. And many of you, or a few of you, might remember him. The first time I heard Father Riley speak was about 20 years ago at a faculty meeting at Immaculata College. It was my first year teaching, and I was exhausted. Therefore, to catch up on my sleep, I sat at the back of the room. About an hour later, after the faculty meeting, I heard the words, "There's a difference between being spiritual and religious." And I jolted from my much needed nap. At the front of the room, there was a man wearing a priest collar speaking. I later learned that this was Father Riley. By the time Father ended his talk, I was on a spiritual high. I rushed to my office and telephoned my husband. As I excitedly recounted much of what Father Riley had talked about that morning, my husband, who was brought up Catholic, interjected, "He can't say that in front of the Pope." I ended our conversation with, "I'm going to invite him to speak at Thomas Paine," to which my husband replied, "He will never come." Well, he did come to Thomas Paine, and several times. Today, I am delighted that once again, he is with us. And after 15 years of no contact, I had to play detective. I had to search the web to track him down. In the process, I discovered that currently he is head of school at Melvin Prep. And I happened upon several articles with a long list of accomplishments, projects, and awards. The project that I had been familiar with, which he spoke about the first time he visited us, is Siloam Wellness Center. It's a community dedicated to support those living with HIV/AIDS in the Philadelphia area. He co-founded this community with Sister Bernadette Kennery, a Mercy nun. Siloam's mission takes a holistic approach to healing and therefore addresses the mental, the emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being of a person afflicted by the disease. So with that intro, without the long list of accomplishments, which he has done, I will turn this morning service over to Father Riley. Welcome, Father.
Thank you, Gina, very much. It's good to be with you again. A shout out to Mike. Mike, I admired your perseverance and your humor during it. Good for you. It's a pleasure to be in your company. And I see somebody on the screen who I have known for a long time, Sue Cassidy. Good to see you, Sue. The older I get, the more eclectic my spirituality becomes. I find myself less attached to a prescriptive or formulaic approach to holiness. And my life experience, my story, if you will, instructs, reveals, and serves as a guide to wholeness and hopefully wholeness. It's best done within a supportive community. It's not a singular task, It's always best done with others. And the reason I say this is because when you look at scripture as a whole, it's really biography. It's a relationship that God has with God's people. And that's a macrocosm. It's a matter of a nation being formed. You and I are individuals, but the same things that happen in scripture and that broad swath of time between the Old Testament and New Testament happens within each of our lives. The relationship that God, Yahweh, had with his people and has with his people is alive and well within us. You and I were breathed into being by a reality completely different from ourselves. You and I have that experience of disconnectedness. There is something within us that strives for perfection. And where did we get that from? That desire always to have the more perfect. Well, it's a remnant of an experience that we once had before this human encounter, this journey through life. It is a remnant and a recollection of the bliss that we experienced having been brought into being by a loving creator. And we too are still trying to find that perfection within us. Some of us are fixated on it and expect everything to be perfect. Others of us grow to be more patient with ourselves, with others, and with the world. And we wandered through our own deserts. We created false gods. We didn't accept the challenge of what we were called to do, and we wanted to return to that place where we became very, very familiar. And that Redeemer, that Savior, that long-awaited prophesied person is really within us a desire to be integrated, whole, and happy. It's a call deep within us. My point is that what we read is what we experience. Theology is biography. Scripture is biography. It's not something that we consume, it's something that we appreciate, mirror, and experience. And I'm grateful to be with you today because the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, as I have come to understand over the years, celebrates this very reality of respectful singularity, not radical individualism, because you hold up community. In one of your beautiful foundational statements, I kind of fuse two of them together. A free and responsible search for truth and meaning while building a peaceful, just, free, and global community. Not radical independence from each other, but interdependence. That's exactly what we call creating the stuff of community. So thank you for the invitation to be with you, because it does give me another opportunity to affirm how I should cherish and do cherish our God, my higher power, and how he relates to us. I'm an Augustinian friar, and that is a member of a Roman Catholic religious community of men and women who follow the rule or way of life of St. Augustine. He lived in the 5th century. In this area, we have Villanova University, we have St. Augustine Prep in South Jersey, and we have Malvern. We have several parishes. If you go down the shore and take the Ben Franklin Bridge, on the Philadelphia side, on the left, is St. Augustine Church. That was our first foundation a couple hundred years ago. And we have St. Thomas of Villanova Parish, our Mother Good Counsel, St. Rita's, St. Nicholas. We've been here for a very long time. St. Augustine's most popular work was the Confessions. It's still read. It's a very popular work. It isn't so much confessions like the things that I did wrong, as much as it is, look how God has been with me. My higher power has been with me my whole life. And it took me half of my life to be able to discover that he was deep within me. In the fifth century, people related to God as totally other. I mean, outside of oneself. As a judge, as somebody who would call us to reckoning someday. Augustine, after a while, realized that there was something else that was essential for him that gave him the ability to relate to this God. Now, keep in mind, he was from Africa. He was a Berber. We'd call that Algeria today. He was of a, I would say, middle-class family. His father had Roman blood in him, but it wasn't too much engaged in the family or in Augustine's life. His mother, Monica, was very engaged. She redefined helicopter mom. She was very engaged in Augustine's life. And it's strange because he stepped away with her like many teenagers do from their moms. He didn't want too much of her spirituality. He was very, very bright. And the family knew that, and they made it possible for him to get the best education that he could. He was very ambitious. At 17, he had a lover with whom he spent 17 years. He had a child out of wedlock. The name of the child is a Deodatus, which is a gift from God. And he became, for the emperor, what you and I might say, you might call him the Secretary of State. He reached the pinnacle of his career, but he was grossly unhappy. He and his friends were walking one night in Milan, and they see these, we would call them homeless people. They were laughing. They were having a great time. And he said, look, they have nothing, and they have a joy that you and I search for. Augustine took it seriously that he had to understand who this higher power was for him. And while we don't talk about it a lot, we Augustinians, who were founded in his spirit, he had a breakdown, what we would call a nervous breakdown. Everything that he had and all that he was just wasn't working for him. When he got himself together, he recognized that he had to go inside and rebuild the scaffolding, the spiritual scaffolding. Who am I? What is my purpose in life? And what is my direction? And what he discovered was that God is not only totally other, but God is intimately involved in my own life. My higher power is in my spiritual DNA, this longing for the other. That was a radical notion at that time, very radical, because God was totally other and unapproachable. What Augustine eventually did, he said, if I can get people around me who can self-disclose about their life experience, I might get a glimpse of the holy that I didn't have before this. So for him, community just wasn't a sociological or economical reality. It was the foundation upon which revelation would continue to happen. Now, one of the interesting things, you know, I'm a Catholic priest. One of the interesting things that we say is all that we know has been revealed. And everything has been revealed. Augustine would probably take a little exception to that. I don't know what Pope Francis would say if he was listening to me. But knowing him from what, as I do from reading, he probably would not disagree that it unfolds, revelation unfolds. There's these aha moments that we have that give us insights into ourselves and into our world that really enable us to redefine our higher power. So in a real way, we are like repositories of that which is continuing to happen. And Augustine grasped that notion. Now, one of the things that he comes up with, he wrote 5 million words. He was prolific. Okay, he was not part of any religious community. He wasn't even baptized when he was doing this. He finally chose to move closer to God in a more formal way, but he created a community around himself wherever he went. Okay, he has this wonderful sentence in the Confessions: "You've made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you." You've made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. Now, he wasn't talking about, anxiety. He wasn't talking about being fidgety. He was saying, I don't feel at home here completely. There's something more, something yet that I need to experience. Then what he says is, which I really appreciate, he said, "Lord, help me know myself so I can know you." That was the crown of his whole theology and his whole philosophy. If I go inside and take this journey to the heart, I'm going to discover my higher power, my God. And in doing that, I need assistance. I need the company of other people. So for Augustine, community is essential. It brings about friendships. It also brings about companions to know self. So here on the campus of Malvern, where there are 800 people every day, we talk about this. Help me know myself. The major project in life for any one of us is self-knowledge. I mean, when I look at my life, I'm getting old now, I'm 73 years old. And I ask myself, which is the topic of the talk today, you've had all these experiences. Have you learned anything? Regrettably, sometimes I say to myself, you haven't learned a darn thing. You know, you do these things continually and they're not getting you anywhere. So I have to resort to mercy, to compassion, to understanding, in order that I continue on this project. Now, here's a little thing I'll share with you. I refuse to die until I know myself as best I can. Now, I don't know if anybody's hearing that. It's going to give me longevity of life, but I would really like to know myself as well as I can, because much of my concerns and worries, it's really not relevant. They're distractions and they're excuses for me not really knowing who I am. And when I come to know myself, some wonderful things surface. Compassion for other people, compassion for myself. Okay. Those bells, by the way, are not part of the talk, but I love them. They're coming from our chapel. So self-knowledge for Augustine was extremely important. Now here we are in this challenging time, and I'm talking about self-knowledge. This is an excellent time. This is an excellent time to work on the human project of self-knowledge. My day is very busy, like yours are, I'm sure. But at night, there's nothing happening on the campus. There's no theater, there's no ball games, there's no meetings. I have the evenings to myself. I was a little unnerved by that a month ago, 6 weeks ago, because I had to be with myself and I. And I recognize that this is something that I should be doing anyway. But some of the things that have surfaced were things from my youth. My relationship with my father wasn't the best. Things that I said and did. I had to go inside like Augustine did and look at the scaffolding. You know, what are the foundational principles upon my life that I'm building? I mean, who am I? You know, I could give you a list, and Gina referred to it. A lot of activities that I got involved in. And they're absolutely wonderful. but probably a lot of distraction going on, keeping very, very busy, rather than taking the time to understand exactly who I am. The reason it's so important, again, is because when you take that journey to the heart, when you're honest with yourself, you do discover your higher power, the principles upon which you're basing your life, your mentors in life. And I find that very appealing. What happens for me is I become a little more reserved, a little less hectic, a little less busy, and a little more thoughtful and reflective. Now, for other people to do that at this time, I realize is not easy, especially when I consider my background in psychology, Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, you really can't be integrated or whole unless some of these needs are met. And some of the basic needs, as he states them, are shelter, water, safety, belonging. Well, that's exactly where we are. So it's even more difficult for us to talk about becoming whole, becoming integrated, understanding who we are in order to understand our Creator. It's really challenging because we're totally disoriented by a lack of safety. We just don't know. And this is the first time, I think, as far as I can tell, the human community globally really doesn't know what's next. So one of the students that I teach, on Zoom, he said, "How are you doing, Father?" I said, "I feel like I have my hand inside a dark room and I'm looking for the light switch and I'm not finding it." Okay. So we're all in this challenging time of trying to figure out what resources do we have to understand this, to get back a measure of control, to enjoy some predictability. We do not have that. Let me share a little bit of the frustration I have. It's probably why I'm sitting where I'm sitting, is how do you plan the summer and next fall for prep school? When do we say we're going to go virtual? Maybe blended learning. Maybe parents can't stay home like they are now because they have to go to work. It's a cloud of unknowing that I find myself in. And of late, I really don't mind being there, because what's happening is some creativity, self-knowledge, dependent on other people, and a sense of the human community. It doesn't make any difference who you know or what you have. We're all in this together. I think some people are suffering, who have classically suffered because of their status or the minority position they have, but fundamentally, all of us are in this together. And what I want to do now is to talk about some principles, and these are mine, that I try to jot down, that enable us to successfully navigate these challenging times, from unknowing to knowing oneself. And they have a lot to do with our life experience. So the foundation that I'm suggesting and I'm trying to lay down is, you have every single thing that you need. It's not in the book that's on your nightstand that's going to give you all the answers. It's not reading scripture from cover to cover. You have that in you because of the place from which we came and the place that we are destined to go. Now, I know those are assumptions there that are very broad, but most of us believe that the meaning and purpose we have in life is exactly what we want to have, so we do less harm to others. If I know who I am, my strength and my weakness, I'm less likely to want to grasp at other people to complement what I need. So I do less damage. I'm not in relationship with somebody because they make me feel better. It can become a partnership. So I want to share these five things with you. And again, these are principles upon which we can clear the way for us for self-knowledge and to be in relationship with our higher power. The first one is, and it's been my experience, all of human reality is characterized by a pattern of life, death, and resurrection. I need to have that sink into the cracks and crevices of my life. Every single thing in life, all organizations, all societies, has a pattern of life, death, and resurrection. Years ago, I stopped sending Christmas cards to people, not everybody, but the only contact I had with some people was this annual Christmas card. I had to be able to admit that some of my relationships changed. They weren't bad, they just weren't alive anymore. Well, they once were flourishing, now I would say they're not, and I have to let them go so I can recognize and concentrate on new opportunities, on new signs of life. If I hold on to past thoughts, if I am preoccupied with nostalgia, which is very tempting at my age, to go back and think how I would and what things were, but a pattern of life, death, and resurrection, if I accept that, then I'm vigilant for new life, for relationships that are before me that could truly be friendships. I don't ever want to get in the position where I say, well, all my friends are the ones that I currently have. Because if I'm honest with myself, it's not that I'm going to be disruptive with them, but they aren't what they used to be. And my own life, the pattern of life, death, and resurrection. That is a great principle for me to move further down this journey to the heart for self-knowing. It honors my experiences. The second one is change is inevitable. Now, we know that, but how change will come about and what shape it will take and where it will lead us is a matter of powerful personal choice. I live with people in community, my fellow Augustinians, and some of them will quickly say, I do not like change at all. I don't like change. It's bothersome to me, and I wish we didn't do it. Okay. Well, I understand why some people don't like change, but it is inevitable. The way I relate to it, the way I digest it, is a matter of powerful personal choice. Now, there are people in my life who were experts. When you look at the life of Christ, for example, he was a master at reframing things. So many people tried to trip him up. Whenever they thought they had him, he just reframed it. Like, who should we honor, Caesar, you know, or God? And what Jesus says, give to Caesar what Caesar's and give to God. He's constantly doing that. Another reference, when the woman is caught in adultery, the elders realize that she should be stoned. That was the law. But why don't we present her to Jesus? So if he says, stone her, then where's this compassion that he's talking about? And if he says, well, where is this, if he says compassion, then he's breaking the law. So what he did, he just wrote on the ground. He was trying to get them in a fever pitch. And he said, oh, look, you can stone her, but look, the one who hasn't sinned, stone her. He's constantly reframing. So change can be disruptive, can put us in the past, can make us obdurate, until we realize that it is inevitable, and it's how I frame it. It's how I frame it. And the reason I'm emphasizing this is because if our higher power is going to be revealed to us through experiences, we must reframe it. We can't be put off by not experiencing change, not wanting that to happen. So as the head of school, for example, I'm very interested in observing progress and change in the faculty and in the students and in the staff. How can we do things better that our experience might give us a greater indication that we're part of something larger? The third one is all human history has a purpose and a meaning. Everything, even this. Our seniors have been given appropriately a lot of attention. People feel sorry for them. They're missing out. And I agree with that. But I also say, I experienced the assassination of JFK, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, the Vietnam War. These experiences mark my generation. They taught me resilience. They put me at a choice point in terms of the person that I can become. The generation before me had the Second World War. The Holocaust certainly had an indelible mark on all of us. To rescue these students from this experience is really to render them a disservice, because the experience can't be seen as just negative. What are the opportunities in it for growth? Now, that's hard to say and hard to hear. I have to preach at our baccalaureate mass tomorrow to all these seniors, but I do want to say this has a meaning and a purpose. Do not become bitter or cynical, because your life experience will not be your guide and your mentor. Okay? So no facet of human experience is ultimately without meaning, including the many forms of death and sinfulness. Everything has a meaning and a purpose. The contrary to that is we become victims. And victimhood is a pathology. And I'm not only speaking spiritually, I'm speaking psychologically. If a person becomes a victim, it gives one a lot of permissions. You can do a lot of things. I mean, I can eat ice cream until the cows come home if I see myself as a victim. But if I step out of that and say, no, this tragic situation, this divorce, this rejection, this radical loneliness, okay, has a meaning and a purpose. And if I can stick with it and see it through, then doors begin to open. I become a cosmic citizenship, a citizen. And what I mean by that is I join the world community. I'm not just fixed on one particular aspect, one particular country, one particular religion, or one particular ethnic group. I become a cosmic citizen. One of the things that I enjoy very much about my faith is that it enables me to look and appreciate my higher power, my God, in all kinds of people. Jaina mentioned Siloam. Siloam was a ministry that Sister Bernadette Canary and I started, and Sue Cassidy here was very helpful in those early days for people with HIV/AIDS. And what I learned, and I'll never forget it, I met some people who I probably would cross the street if I saw them coming to me. And I learned, much to my embarrassment, they had some powerful spiritual presence to them. The packaging wasn't great, but I had all the education and people called me father, and which they should never do. When you're I was 27 and people called me father. They shouldn't call you father until you're my age now. They should call you father wannabe maybe, but not father. So I would meet these people who would talk about their relationship with God. And I became the student of the people to whom we were ministering. And I was better off for that. I'm glad, probably Sister Bernadette introduced me to that. Because when we became the students, there were no judgments. We weren't helping people. They were God's gift to us. They were helping us grow. So everything in human history has a meaning and a purpose. I get very upset, for example, when some students will say dumb things like, did the Holocaust really happen? So I say, come here. let me explain this to you. You cannot have this notion here because this was a true experience and it informs us. But unfortunately, as you and I know, sitting here, those detracting voices are out there. So hopefully I'm painting this picture that our own human experience is really what we find in Scripture. Not that you shouldn't utilize Scripture, but our own life has a trajectory beyond our doing and has within it, if we examine our experiences, the seeds for our own personal redemption. I mean, wholeness and holiness. The fourth one is our basic stance as people who enjoy the human community and ourselves is to develop positive possibilities in any situation rather than concentrate on solving problems. I've done that a lot, especially when people come to me, not only for confession, but for advice. For a long time, I thought I was the problem solver and I had to be clever. Boy, that it wasted so much time and so many people's time. There's something wonderful about just being with people and not knowing what to do. Because most of us want that. It's too hard to tell our stories, our tale of woe to people to have them understand it. But it's really nice when somebody's there to listen to it. Okay. That's really wonderful. So the basic stance is, what are the positive possibilities rather than trying to solve problems? And the fifth one is our supreme value in life is how we invest ourselves in living. It isn't what we do or the titles that we have, but what's most important is our perspective and our attitude. That's the legacy. When I look back on my life, the people who impressed me the most were the people who had a particular attitude, appreciation of life, and a wonderful perspective. That's what I want to have with these students. I am so lucky, being my age, I'm the oldest one on campus. So I have an opportunity to pass on a perspective. So those five things, you know, all human reality, pattern of life, death, and resurrection, everything, change is inevitable. And it's how we frame it in our life. Everything has a meaning and a purpose. And even the stuff that we're living with now that we should have let go years ago, maybe now is the time to let it go. And positive possibilities rather than trying to solve problems and invest ourselves, not in a name or what we're leaving behind, except for our perspective and our attitude. So when I say we've had the experience, what is the lesson? We continue to have the experience. And the lesson is, am I becoming a person who knows him or herself? And it's so freeing and so wonderful, especially to be able to do that in a loving and caring community. So at this time, what I'd like to move on to in our service is matters of the heart. And that's the sharing of significant joys, concerns, or anything that I may have said. So now it's open to all of us.